Mom, it's here!
Welcome to another exciting podcast, Stoney Richards Live from the Center podcast for you. If you got it from the website at stoneyrichards.com, thank you very much. Just want you to know that we're also available now on Twitter as a free podcast. Thank you very much. Stoney Richards at Twitter is where you can find me, and you can find this podcast either on the website at stoneyrichards.com or from iTunes, and our thanks to them for letting us put it up there. LFC Live from the Center is ready to go for you, and what a week we come off of. I mean, we went through a marathon on Capitol Hill for 11 hours where I don't think anything was solved, but this Benghazi investigation has gone on longer than Watergate. It's gone on longer than the Kennedy assassination investigation, and nothing's really been settled by it. And where are we? Where were we at the end of 11 hours on Thursday night? Really nowhere. And it also seemed, if you were watching on any of the cable channels, that there was no other news, that the entire world stopped to watch Hillary Clinton on Capitol Hill. And yet, my friends, you bet there was news. And it was this, among other things, reported in the Washington Post. John Wagner and David Weigel wrote the story. Democratic presidential hopeful Lincoln Chafee announced Friday he is withdrawing from the race, ending a bid that had failed to gain any traction or any surprise from that fact. Chafee, a former governor and U.S. senator from Rhode Island, used an appearance in Washington at a Democratic National Committee forum on women's leadership to make his announcement. Chafee bowed out with a plea for, quote, an end to the endless wars and the beginning of a new era for the United States and humanity, end quote. Do we want to be remembered as a bomber of weddings and hospitals, Chafee said, or do we want to be remembered as peacemakers, as pioneers of a more harmonious world? I'll give you a moment to choose. Not his words. Chafee's exit further narrows a Democratic field led by Hillary and Bernie Sanders and also Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley. So now we are down to three. DNC Chairwoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz called Chafee a class act and said she looks forward to him continuing to campaign for Democrats. Chafee was polling at less than 1% in recent national polls, averaging less than 1% in recent polls from Iowa and New Hampshire, the first two nominating states, according to Real Clear Politics. And that's real clear. Chafee, a former Republican, made a splash in the run-up to the launch of his bid, saying in an interview that Clinton's 2002 Senate vote to authorize military action in Iraq should disqualify her from becoming commander-in-chief. Coverage of his campaign announcement in June was dominated by his embrace of the metric system. It doesn't take long before 34 degrees is hot. And Chafee never seemed to get on track after that. He was largely a bystander in the first Democratic debate this month in Las Vegas, and through September he had raised only $44,506 for his candidacy. According to Democracy in Action, a watchdog group, Chafee spent 35 days campaigning in New Hampshire more than any other candidate. Visits to states that were further from his native Rhode Island were more scarce, just four in Iowa and two in South Carolina. Not exactly the way to do it. Chafee's presidential race was the least successful of his career, and this career was twice boosted by happenstance. In case you didn't know, in 1999, when we all partied like it was, Rhode Island Senator John Chafee died. The state's Republican governor handed the seat to his son, Lincoln. By his own admission, the new senator and former mayor of Warwick, Rhode Island, was befuddled by the job, telling CNN's Anderson Cooper, if you recall, that he voted for a major banking reform bill because he'd just arrived at the Senate and thought he'd get some do-overs. He won a full term in 2000, even after admitting to some youthful and regrettable experiments with drugs. Now, when I hear someone talking about a Rhode Island politician whose father was a senator who got to Washington based on his family name, used cocaine, and wasn't very smart, I know there's only a 50-50 chance it's me. Then Representative Patrick Kennedy, the Democratic son of Edward M. Kennedy, joked at a 2001 Providence political roast. Meanwhile, Chaffee established himself as perhaps the most liberal member of the Republican conference. He opposed the Iraq War and several of President George W. Bush's policy initiatives. In 2006, he faced a stiff Club for Growth-backed primary challenge from the conservative Cranston, Rhode Island Mayor Steve Laffey, who considered Chaffee, Laffey said, a lightweight. This guy's a U.S. senator, Laffey recalled in his memoir, Primary Mistake. They can't all be like this, or we're really in trouble. Chaffee, backed by National Republicans, won the primary but lost the general election to now Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, a Democrat. He took a teaching job at Brown University, but made a surprise return to politics in 2010 as an independent candidate for governor. Chaffee was running a strong third when the Democratic nominee Frank Caprio made a fateful gaffe, told the president Obama would visit the state but not endorse him. Caprio said, "He can take his endorsement and really shove it as far as I'm concerned." His poll numbers cratered overnight, and liberal voters flocked to Chaffee, who narrowly won. It was not a recipe for a successful term. Chaffee, who took office near the end of the Great Recession, was a distant and unpopular governor deciding against re-election after polling showed him losing to any serious candidate. His exit from the political scene was welcomed. His decision to run for president inspired a baffled editorial from Rhode Island's biggest newspaper. His administration was marked by his persistent refusal to understand or address the state's economic problems, a bizarre crusade against the use of the words Christmas tree to describe the state's Christmas tree, prickly denunciations of people who challenged his policies, his hustling of a top aide, Richard Licht, into a judgeship in violation of the spirit of the state's revolving door law, and a series of actions that seemed designed only to make life harder for the state's struggling middle class, wrote the Providence Journal. The idea that such a dismal record in an executive position would be a recommendation for the presidency of the United States seems preposterous. On the campaign trail, Chaffee leaned more on his record as a naysaying senator than on his 4 years as governor. In what will have been his only debate performance, he went negative against Clinton for her Iraq War vote. The day after, when CNN asked when he would get out of the race, Chaffee suggested that the establishment does not want to hear an anti-war voice. That noise was the door slamming behind him.
Dancing begins.
To say in Washington, what have we here? This a story from Mike E. Johnson in Mother Jones. Following the Democratic presidential debate a couple weeks ago, Alan Rappaport of the New York Times published a roundup of the analyses of 11 political experts, bloggers, radio hosts, pollsters. Twitter users quickly pounced on a problem with the roundup. All 11 experts were white men. Criticism of the roundup's lack of diversity led the Times public editor Margaret Sullivan to publish a response for which she solicited comment from the paper's chief politics editor, Carolyn Ryan. Ryan claimed that Rappaport was unaware of the ethnicities of the men in the roundup, but acknowledged that the exclusion of more diverse voices was unacceptable. Ryan offered an unusual solution to the problem. We are going to do it again for subsequent debates, and Alan will gather diverse voices, Ryan wrote. And as one suggestion, I would like to invite any bloggers, political analysts, and thinkers who do post-debate analysis, there's a job for you, and are interested in being included in the roundup to email Alan at alan.rappaport@newyorktimes.com on the next debate day, October 28th. If you're looking for work, my friends, here it is. 2 days after Sullivan published Ryan's take, the Huffington Post ran a piece criticizing Ryan's comment under the headline, NYT can't find minorities to comment on politics, asks them to write in. Indeed, it seems a stretch to claim that a media organization like the New York Times would be capable of including diverse voices in its coverage of a major event only by resorting to crowdsourcing. Ryan's explanation also left unclear the logistics of community write-in debate coverage. Anybody can do it. In Sullivan's post, Ryan said Rappaport would gather diverse voices, but did not specify how his approach would specifically change or how he would screen emails to ensure a diversity of voices. Reached by mail, Ryan responded, he will be scanning Twitter, blogs, websites, magazine sites, and perhaps television to gather opinions. He'll be gathering quotes with several goals in mind. One is that he reflect a range of diverse voices. Another is that he gather commentary about a number of candidates, not just one. Rappaport would be looking for considered analysis, she continued, and not merely cheerleading for candidates or worse, mean-spirited remarks. But how would scanning various media sources, something that Rappaport is presumably already doing, ensure that diverse voices would be included in his roundup? Would he assemble a separate pile of email submissions from women and people of color? He won't be making piles of responses, Ryan wrote. He will make sure to gather a range of diverse voices by doing quick bio searches on Google, Twitter searches, etc., on those he is quoting. Oh, my gosh. Sometimes, for example, the gender of a writer is obvious. Other times it is not. And as the editor, I will certainly make sure that a diverse range of voices is included. The next primary debate on the Republican side will take place October 28th. Only then will we know if Ryan and Rappaport's strategy to include new voices will work. Stoney Richards, live from the Center podcast, encourages you all to participate.
Let the dancing begin.
Exciting episode of the Clintodashians. In today's episode, we find Hillary relaxing at home.
Bill, could you get me another vodka tonic?
Well, Hill, you've had two already. I mean, are you sure that's a good mix for your yoga?
I'll tell you one thing, Bill. It's a lot better mix than those fools up on the hill.
Hillary, breathe. Is that your phone, Hill?
Yeah, I'll get it. Hello.
Yeah, hello, Hillary. This is Trey Gowdy. I hope you're doing all right,
Congressman. I told you all I know. Yeah, I
wanted to ask about an email, Ms. Secretary, that you sent on October 24th, 2013, that ended with the words, and I quote, "What do you think?"
Now, my question is, did you mean to end that with an exclamation point, what do you think, or with a question mark, what do you think? Because in the copy I have, there doesn't seem to be any quotation marks at all. Now, could you tell me what you meant by that?
Bill, is that vodka coming?
I'm on the phone there, Hill. I'll be right with you. I'm sorry. What were you saying, Donald? So, we've all had our fair share of interns screwing things up for us, if you know what I'm talking about. And I'm talking about you being the man when it comes to irresponsible interns. So what do I do with this dimwit tweeter in Iowa?
Donald, it's a tough situation to be in, but you just have to move on.
Bill, listen to me. This is Donald Trump talking. This is Iowa. Can you imagine that state bringing me grief? My own. That corn-pone state is so flat they could build a one-story duplex and happen to be the highest building on their skyline. You know what I'm talking about? I mean, imagine me trailing old sleepy eyes there. What is that all about?
Yeah, Donald, well, you just have to define what is.
Well, is that all you have to do, or is it?
Find out in our next exciting episode of The Clintodashians. Well, as we consider with LFC, Stoney Richards Live from the Center podcast, it is time for another of our weekly letters from home, because, ladies and gentlemen, as I always like to say, no matter how far away you roam, there simply is no place like home. The news swirled this past week has been as intense as a blast from the powerful hurricane that Patricia is on the West Coast. Hillary Clinton's 11-hour marathon in front of congressional committee, Donald Trump falling behind Ben Carson in the polls, the budget holdup in Harrisburg in its 10th month, for God's sake, Stevie Wonder came to town. The list goes on, but only one story was worthy of conversation this past week in Pittsburgh, and that is, will Landry Jones be ready to start against Kansas City on Sunday, or will Ben Roethlisberger rise from the injured to save yet another Sunday? Not really a question so much as a Pittsburgh statement. Michael, or as he became in his 11 minutes of fame, yes, he didn't get the full 15 minutes, Mike Vick, has been relegated in stories as a more placeholder now in telling the story of Landry Jones' coronation in last Sunday's game. The offensive line is a mess, held together by Velcro and Gorilla Tape. Martavius Bryant is back, and he's a footnote. Le'Veon Bell is playing as well as ever, and we don't even review his stats. And Antonio Brown is whining that he's not getting enough passes, and no one hears him. The reason is the clamor that Landry Jones created when he saved the Pittsburgh Steelers from the jaws of defeat last Sunday against the Arizona Cardinals at Heinz Field on a cold, wintry afternoon in Pittsburgh. The only verbal description missing was the cold, tundra-like surface of the Berg's icy North Shore. So, yes, the Cubs have been eliminated from the baseball playoffs. The Penguins can't seem to get it in gear, but do we care? No, because we have a Steelers quarterback controversy that isn't all that bad. It's really kind of a win-win situation if we can win-win, and winning is the only way out of this come Sunday in Kansas City. And speaking of Pittsburgh traditions, Macy's Downtown Santa's chair will be donated to the Heinz History Center, we've recently learned. And speaking as I was earlier of the state's budget impasse, it may now hit a little closer to home, as Governor Wolf's administration may be shutting down horse racing statewide as a result of the budget stalemate. And note to Harrisburg, fine if you do, but please don't force the state liquor stores to close. You do that, and we'll give you anything you want. Even a win in Kansas City on Sunday with a third-string practice quarterback. I'm Stoney Richards, and that's this week's Letter from Home. Good evening and welcome to Meet the Newsmaker, and with us, recently elected Liberal Party member, the new Canadian Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau. Congratulations on your victory, Mr. Trudeau, and what do you hope to bring to Canada?
Well, you know, I'm glad you asked, because I hope that, you know, as a country that we can gel. You know, I want us to work hard, go to the corners and grind if you have to, you know, get the elbows up and go hard to the net. I mean, that's always been a basis of what we play for.
Yes, but I mean, politically.
Well, as I said, we got a good core, you know. I mean, from east to west, from north to south, a great farm team. And barring injuries, I think...
But, Mr. Prime Minister, you're talking in hockey terms. I was wondering...
Well, how else would you expect me to reach the Canadian people? I mean, five provinces up here, you know, go Abs, go Leafs, and the Wild West. You can't forget that. Calgary and Vancouver and Edmonton. Edmonton! We still mourn the loss of the great one.
So, we're guessing business as usual then, sir?
Well, I'll tell you, my first order of business is I'd like to get some of the American teams out of the original six. I don't care about the history of it. And speaking of history, if we can't get the Nordique back in the NHL, what are we supposed to do? And finally, and this is something that I ran on for many months, I want to get Patrick Waugh to apologize for what he did in Montreal way back. I never forgave him. He went down to the Avalanche and took the Stanley Cup away from Canada, and I'll never forgive him for that. And I think it's time that he fess up and come up to Canada and have a little sit down here with the Prime Minister.
Well, there you have it. Thank you very much, sir. There you have it. News with Newsmakers Today, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. Well, my friends, now on the Stoney Richards Live from the Center podcast, it is time once again for the evening sports dish, so let's get right to it, shall we, ladies and gentlemen? I had a conversation this past week with a Kansas City Royals fan who sent me condolences on, as he put it, what happened to the Pirates in the postseason. This was just a few hours before the Chicago Cubs were also eliminated by the New York Mets. To which I replied that this was a very exciting and fun baseball season, and that once getting to the postseason, we are well aware of the fact that anything can happen. I went on to say that we've been there the past 3 years, and we know it's just a matter of time before the Pirates break through and go deeper, farther, and ultimately all the way. Let alone surprising my phone friend with my response, I surprised even myself, because here I was saying it's not so much even a we'll get them next year speech as it was the Pirates have arrived as a baseball franchise, and it wasn't even said in the heat of a playoff series. It was sometime after the infield dust had settled. But that's summer's pastime, right? We now have something far more exciting, which is another sex scandal in college sports. This time it's Rick Pitino in the center of an investigation into an escort's book claiming that one of Pitino's former staffers hired an exotic dancer, code for stripper in this context, to have her hire more dancers, exotic and otherwise, and I believe a lap dance is considered exotic, and also to have sex with recruits and players. Now, time to run the tape. We always run at times like this that says the head coach will not resign. He will not let us down, and that he denies any knowledge of these sorts of activities going on with his basketball team. Said Pitino the other day, quote, "Someday I will walk away in celebration of many memorable years, but that time is not now. I do not fight these accusations by others, but rather turn the other cheek," end quote. And speaking of turning the other cheek, Lamar Odom, rehabbing from being found overdosed on cocaine and other drugs in a Nevada brothel, the Love Ranch in Crystal, Nevada, says there may be a reconciling with Khloe Kardashian from their divorce suit, to which we will now pause so members of the audience can give an audible aww. I'm Stoney Richards, and that's sports from my vantage point. High in the moon!
Let's get out there and hit some people!
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Another Live from the Center podcast, the Stoney Richards Live from the Center podcast. Thanks for being here and getting it either off the website at stoneyrichards.com, or thanks to our friends at iTunes. We're now up there as a free podcast, Stoney Richards Live from the Center. You can follow me on Twitter at Stony Richards. Our thanks for all the music that we have on this program. Our musical director, the lovely Johnny Grieco, and of course, our webmaster, Jeff Orb. I'm Stony Richards. Thank you for listening to the Stony Richards Live from the Center podcast.